Gotta clear out my tubes. Tubes cleared.
All right.
Butterscotch
Shenanigans. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 136 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm the Refactoria adventurer.
I'm Sam, and I look at colors all day.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is for Brewery 520. Great Teen.
Hey.
Actually, before you move on, how do we spell great teen? Because I've seen you guys both spell it GR8 teen, like teenager. Yes.
Yeah.
But I spell it GR18. Because that's just the word 18. Right,
GR18 is good. I think we can all agree that you don't spell it GR8EEN.
No, we do not.
Because that looks like Gerbine.
Okay. Yeah,
at least, I think my problem with GR18 is that it looks like GR18. You know what I mean?
I mean, it does. That's true.
Sort of like a droid.
Yes.
Name.
It's a droid name. GR18, maybe that's mascot
that
for
that. Could be a good droid.
Maybe that's the name of the character.
All right, we just named the character for Levelhead. By the way, before we get started, warning, there's going to be profanity on this show.
Dang.
That's it. That's the whole thing. So don't listen if you don't like that or if you're a child.
If you can't tell the difference between harmless swears and harmful swears, don't listen. Or if your parents can't tell the difference and know what you listen to, then also don't listen.
Yeah, because words aren't bad. People are bad.
Yeah, it's just like guns.
Yeah. Words don't hurt people. People with words hurt people.
That's true.
All right. Let's get on to some news. First off, it is 20 Great Teen.
Still.
Mm-hmm. 20 Great Teen, quit fucking around.
Yep.
That's the slogan of the year.
So I got a tattoo.
Sam got a tattoo. So far, Sam.
Huh.
It's now the first week of February, and you have already gotten LASIK and a tattoo.
I know. I told you, I'm not fucking around.
I'm worried that you're not fucking around too hard and that you're sprinting a marathon because there's still 11 more months of the year.
I don't know, man. I feel like
what are you going to do?
If I can make it 5 weeks, I feel like I can just keep on keeping on, you know? Yeah.
But what are you going to look like by the time the year is done?
He's going to have lots.
He's going to have a mohawk, 33 piercings.
There'll be laser wounds everywhere.
Yeah. It's going to be crazy.
Laser surgery.
Now, I was actually looking at my list of my things to do, and it's gotten very short all of a sudden.
That's what I'm saying.
Because I was actually trying to do stuff for the last 5 weeks.
This reminds me of when you did the Uberman.
It was a problem.
Because you were like, I need more time in the day to do things. I'm going to just stop sleeping.
Yeah, the Uberman, for everybody who doesn't know about this, which is everybody because nobody has heard of this except for a select few
weirdos,
total weirdos who are young enough to take on this kind of a challenge of just, I guess, just minimal sleep. It's just sleeping.
It's 2 hours a day.
It was our generation's version of the Tide Pod.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, but even less stupid than that, actually. So, you
know. Yeah. So Sam did the Uberman, where he was sleeping for like 8 seconds a day.
I had this huge list. This was the thing that prompted it. I had this huge list of all these things I wanted to do. And then I just was sort of doing the math on the time. I was like, I have maybe like 5 hours a day between everything else to get this stuff done. And I was like,
like that your strategy there wasn't, maybe I should quit cheerleading and quit these other things that I'm doing.
Just do more.
I should instead not sleep. That's the thing.
Sleep is probably the one thing you can just cut. You don't even need it.
It's the American way, you know? It's the American way. So, yeah, I made this huge list. And then, I said, okay, if I just don't sleep, then obviously I get like 6 more
hours.
You got
tons of time.
It's incredible.
That is true.
But then you just got bored.
Yeah. So that's the weird thing about doing the Uberman thing is that I did. I mean, there were some serious consequences, like losing my short-term memory for a while.
Cognitive deficits.
Some real intense cognitive deficits.
You ended up with zombie eyes. You know, you kind of get like the dark circles and the bloodshot stare.
You're kind of basically an undead person, I guess, is a better way to think about it.
Yep.
But after just a few days, you know, I got most of the things on my list done. And then I was just conscious. Too much.
But then further, you then had to take naps at weird parts of the day and very religiously, because if you fucked it up, then like there was a very fine balance where this kind of a thing can supposedly work, which I'm still not.
Oh yeah.
At all
super
convinced of.
Dubious.
but if, even if it could work, it would only do so if you, it's, what is it? Like you take a nap like eight times
every four
or something.
Hours.
Yeah.
For 20 minutes.
Right. So that's how you sleep, right? Which is fucking crazy. But that also means not only, so you sort of like, You took sleep away where everybody else is also unconscious.
Yes.
Because you're like, I don't have enough time to hang out with people and do all the things I want to do. Mm-hmm. So then now, instead of doing that, just being unconscious while everybody else is. Now while everybody else is conscious, you just have to take naps.
Yeah, you can just disappear, which was also the big bummer for me.
Yeah, it interrupts everything. So I guess my overall point here is just be careful.
I will not slow down.
Well, the thing is, though.
The tattoo that he got, though, is, you know, speaks to this pretty directly.
It does.
Yeah. That's true. Sam's tattoo. What does it say?
It says memento mori, which is just
basically like you're going to die.
It just says, remember, you'll die.
Yeah. So quit fucking around.
Basically, Sam got a tattoo. Which sounds very morbid, but to me, it's like the appropriate version of carpe diem, because the thing is, like, you can't ever actually motivate
people. You could always seize tomorrow.
That's part of it, but also, like, you can't ever motivate people to do stuff by pointing out that
seizing should happen.
Yeah. Like, oh, you have a whole day. It's
better to remember that you just always have a metaphorical gun to your head.
Yes. I think it's a much more motivating factor, at least it has been for me. So.
And metaphorical swears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The swear words, they hurt a lot.
Yeah. Right. Depending. Yeah.
So it's true. I actually don't know. When my friends asked me yesterday, she said the exact same thing. She sent me a text because she saw a picture of the tattoo. She said, what is he going on over there? She's, you know, what do you got? What's next on the list? And I was like, honestly, I don't know.
I'm just saying, be careful, because pretty soon it's going to be 20 great teen, nothing but fucking around, because there's nothing else you're going to be able to do.
But what an envious position to get to. In a position where
you're like, all I'm doing is fucking around now.
But because I did everything as opposed to just some fucking around.
But. I don't think this is going to be a problem, because there's another thing that you have done in the past 2 weeks, which is decided to learn how to be an artist.
Yes.
Instead of just do art.
This is true.
Which are very, very different things, because now you're actually coming into our world as programmers, where you don't get to just be a programmer. You have to be constantly learning how to be a programmer, and how to do things better, because you have to constantly add more and more difficult stuff to your plate, right?
That's correct.
And so I have never, for the past long time, actually, because I was also programming in grad school. So for as long as I've been programming, there has never been a moment where I looked at the future and said, I think I've learned all the stuff, you know? Not even just nowhere near.
So I guess, that's true. So that's where...
So that's where the time goes. So really, you're just clearing all this other shit out of the way. That's
exactly right.
So that you can become the most powerful artist in the universe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, so like this week, I'm clearing out my GDC talk, getting that out of the way.
Same.
Just getting, you know, some general life stuff handled, get some health appointments taken care of, blah, mm-hmm. blah.
Yep.
And then that way I can just, you know, focus on art.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 20 great teen.
20 great teen.
Quit fucking around.
I'm serious though. We need to call this character
GR18. I'm down. Let's do it.
Great teen. Mm-hmm. okay. Otherwise in the news. So last week, we as Adam said, we took an adventure in Refactoria, which is the mystical land where you do things over, but better.
Yep. Yes. Similar to hell, but looks slightly better.
It's more productive.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And it can be fun.
It can be.
But yeah, refactoring, for anybody who's not a programmer, It's just like editing is for writing, only it's for programming. So we actually use it just to talk about everything now, because it has a good feel to it. It means a little bit more than just like editing, because it's all about kind of doing a better job and like restructuring and identifying things that could be more effective.
Yeah. Refactoring is the idea that as you are solving problems, you just don't know the full scope of what you need to know. And so
you solve it okay.
Yeah, you always solve a problem badly at the beginning. But you do solve it.
Yep.
And then as you learn more, you look back and you go, that could be way better. And then you refactor. Right?
Yep.
So we've been working on, I refactored the entire system of the game to make it of Levelhead, which is our current upcoming game, to make it more optimized, which has led to the interesting quirk that now save files are upside down.
Mm-hmm.
So when you build a level in this game and you save it, it gets flipped upside down in the save file. And then when it gets loaded, it gets flipped back upside down.
Although,
again.
This does depend on just how you're thinking about all these parts, though, because isn't a file just a line of bytes, you know?
Yes. Like,
can that really be upside down?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Turns out it can.
So you just turn all the zeros and ones upside down.
Yeah. Turns out they're just still zeros and ones. It's pretty easy to
read.
They're
kind of the same now.
Yeah. Well, no, I only turn the zeros upside down. The ones can stay upright.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's what it's called when you flip a bit, right? You just turn the zero upside down?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason for this was that the saves were originally using the Crashlands way of sort of saving locations, which turns out isn't as optimal as it could be. It takes a lot of extra work to make an infinite world. The levels in Levelhead are not infinite. Mm-hmm. You know, they're constrained because it turns out we tried this at the beginning, infinite levels. It's a nightmare, actually. Yeah. Like not having boundaries.
Well, it's like if you're if you want to get started drawing or something, and you sit down at a piece of paper, and suddenly that piece of paper is as big as your house.
Yeah, you're just like
how do I put marks on
this? So we actually found that it originally, because we can do infinite levels, just as we can do in an infinite world in Crashlands. Mm-hmm. So I originally coded it that way to make that possible. But that turned out to be a bad idea.
Constraints are your best friend when it comes to
constraints.
Creativity.
Are actually good.
And infinity is inefficient.
Yeah. It turns out that in Game Maker, it's what we use to make our games, negative numbers are up. And so the bottom of the level is zero. And as you go up, everything is
negative. And I will say that is generally true just from a programming perspective, because images are rasterized from top left down.
Right.
Right.
So
the numbers grow. Y goes up as you go down.
Right.
Image. Well, that's why when you used to load a really huge picture, you know, back in the
you could
early
see
inner
it
days, yeah, you'd see
working
it slowly creep its way down
line
from top
by
to
line,
bottom,
right?
Yeah, 90s kids will remember this, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah,
also, the screeching modem noise that happened beforehand.
Yep, the Velociraptor modem screech. Mm-hmm.
What is funny, because it doesn't have to have been that way, because we could have also rasterized from bottom to top, right?
Yeah, but it could have been anyway.
But at some point back when people were inventing all this shit, they decided, yeah, Cartesian coordinates that we all learn, those go, you know, positive goes up, mm-hmm. but... We're programmers. We don't have time for whatever that is. So we're going to instead go from, and there's probably some good, weird technical reason why like the top left part of a screen mm-hmm. Somehow has to be different because fuck, who knows? Like maybe photons like prefer going to the right or some wacky ass thing.
Who knows?
Probably not.
I don't know. Cause back then they had to really optimize for things like the speed of light, photons,
speed of electrons, how good your vacuum tubes are, how vacuum
your tubes are.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of a weird outcome is now all of our numbers have to be positive, but when they go into Game Maker, they have to be negative. And so we have to flip them upside down.
I think
down.
This is just one of our continued pursuits to make our art imitate life, you know, because your eyeball does the same thing.
When you see something, your retina flips it upside down, mm-hmm. and then your brain is like, fuck, and then it
puts it back.
It puts it back. So your retina just keeps sending upside down images. Mm-hmm.
When somebody starts making in this game, when somebody starts making a level, because the world is constrained, mm-hmm. can they start making it anywhere? Can I like go to the middle of the map or the middle of the allowable area and just slap a thing down and start there?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. You put your start location wherever you want.
Cool. You can
start on the far right.
What?
If you want to read the level from right to left.
Yeah.
If you want to make an Arabic level,
mm-hmm.
you can put mm-hmm. your character on the right.
Done. Now you're right to left
level.
Or Hebrew. I believe that's right to left as well.
If you want to make a Chinese level, you can make a tall level, put your character at the top and work your way down.
Boom.
Yeah,
follow and the
just depending on where your linguistics are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then we just hope that we'll actually provide font support for all of those choices, so that you can actually read the blocks that are put down.
Mm-hmm. Right, because all the blocks
just
are
be
words
squares instead. Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Which is fine because that's what blocks are. So actually, you know, really, it works out fine.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah.
All right, and also in Refactoria, we have been Adam's been updating our. So we have a whole new website in the works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is going to allow us to flex rumpus very firmly.
We'll flex so that we can leap to the next level.
Yeah, so rumpus is our new back end. It's our new web infrastructure.
I'm never going to get tired of kind of just giggling a little bit.
That's pretty good. Man.
Yeah. And one of the things that we wanted to do with rumpus that we weren't able to do with Beescotch ID is actually fully integrated into all of our web presence. So
everything.
So right now, if you use Beescotch ID to log into a game, you can't actually do anything outside of the games with it. You can't like go to our website and
Log into the forums.
You can log into the forums.
But it is a very hacky, wacky thing. Because I'm using an existing forum software that wasn't designed to let you integrate other sign-in things into it. And so
it's
very wacky.
You made it do it.
Yep.
And so this is part of us sort of bringing everything in house, and we wanted to do away with usernames and passwords and stuff, which means if you open up a Levelhead and you want to sign into Rumpus, it actually routes you through our website. Mm-hmm. So when you sign in to Levelhead, you also sign in to our website, which means we can do all kinds of cool, whatever the hell we want, with sort of, you know, user profiles and allow you to change your account settings and stuff like that through the website. So also as part of this, Adam has been leaning on Rumpus backend technology to redo our blog and
everything. If you look at our current website at www.bscotch.net, it's this old WordPress site that is a hell of a lot better than what we had before that. So, you know, we're making progress over the years, but it suffers from WordPress, which is one thing, but it also suffers from this sort of generic problem we had where we didn't actually know what we were trying to share with people, and we didn't really have a purpose for the website besides, they just said, well, we got to have a website, so then they did, and they said, well, we like writing stuff, so then they did, and that was kind of...
So it was a blog.
So it was just a blog.
And it happened to have links to our games on it, but...
Right.
Yeah.
And then when we migrated that to WordPress, and then it became more of a hybrid, where it was kind of like, now we're trying to...
It was almost like a business website.
Yeah, it's like a business website with a blog on it. So it's kind of in this awkward transition phase where now all of a sudden you just kind of couldn't quite get to anything you wanted, you know?
Well, and it added the problem of our podcast was being run through the blog. So every time we would put up a podcast episode, we would also put up a blog post about that episode.
Yeah. And we had a lot of discussions over the past couple of years where we'd say, ooh, we want to put out a post this week to announce this thing that we're doing, like, or announce the sale that's going on or whatever. And we say, oh, we got to time this because the podcast one comes out every Wednesday.
And
we don't want to bury this announcement. And, you know, so the whole thing was just very
awkward.
So
then we ended up just not announcing anything or talking about anything.
Yeah, well, website. Mm-hmm. Right. So I've been clearing all this stuff out, getting rid of old posts and getting ready to do this migration to the new site that I'm making, and saw that over the past year, all the posts that we've made just fit on one page.
It's like
our
site.
It's eight or 10 posts or something. For the entire past year, but we actually have, I think, 180 posts in our history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all years prior, we actually were putting out a ton of stuff.
So we wrote tons of stuff, and then we got the new website, and then we're like, nah, nobody's going to see this. And then
we stopped.
That's an interesting thing about how, you know, if you choose the wrong tool, or if you accidentally build one of these design constraints for yourself, it will shift your behavior like 100% into a particular direction.
Yep.
And whether that's related to, you know, website or, you know, in the broader sense, just some weird and wacky thing you have going on in your life.
Yeah.
Like if you've got a really long commute, right? And you have to drive. Now instead of reading, maybe you're just listening to audiobooks because that's your life now.
Yep.
You know? And so it's one of those things where you gotta be careful about these things because we thought it was a huge improvement when we got it.
And it was a huge visual improvement.
Definitely. Visually, but from an overall design perspective, from what we actually need to do and want to do, it doesn't make much sense.
Well, but actually that's important too, the distinction between needing and wanting. Mm-hmm. Because... That was also because, you know, we're, as we talk about in the podcast, we're constantly experimenting with what it means to be running a business and marketing and trying to sell games and all this. And we set up that site at the time under our understanding at the time of what was important, which we now basically don't believe any of at all. And I think in particular, we're kind of talking about this a bit this morning. I think we mentioned it before.
Well, because now we believe that nothing is important.
That nothing really matters. So we should do what we want.
Because it's 2018.
But in particular, and Sam was laughing this morning because he went and looked at on Google Play and set up these experiments for A/B testing, right? And we mentioned in the past that one of those experiments we did was to remove the description from Crashlands from the store page, just remove it and compare that to one with a description. Mm-hmm. And it turns out there's statistically no difference at all. And that has been running now for months.
Since October.
And so we have an enormous wealth of data, like 26,000
data points.
collectively just saying that we're exactly in the window. Like nothing is different between these two. And so I've been kind of looking at other like really good company websites making games to figure out. So like looking at Blizzard, who does a stellar job. And I noticed that there's barely any text anywhere. It's just images. They don't tell you shit. Right,
because they just throw a couple images and then open up comments.
Yeah,
and then people just scream at each other for about 1,000 pages.
Right, it's great.
And they do have news and a blog. I question their decision to have comments, but they do have.
It's a bad move.
Yeah, they do have news pages, and they have blog posts, and they have like additional content you can go into. But you got to dig for all that stuff. The main thing is you hit the site, and all you just see is games. You just see these giant, beautiful splash images. You see links to all their games. You see places you can go buy them. And that's it. And it feels really good to be on there. And so sort of taking all these lessons together has caused a redesign of this thing to say, we were trying too hard. Mm-hmm. We were trying to do too many things at once. We were so worried that somebody wouldn't know that we had, say, like a blog, for example, that we weren't willing to kind of like put it behind something. Mm-hmm. So that meant everything had to be on the front page, and everything is on the front page. You know, you hit the site and everything is there at the same time. And so there's no, it just doesn't feel clean. You don't, it's just overwhelming. So mm-hmm. we're trying to get rid of all that.
Yeah. We don't want to overwhelm. We don't want to underwhelm.
We just
we just want people perfectly to get to our site and just go, I'm feeling whelmed mm-hmm. right now.
Feeling it.
It's going to be whelming and welcoming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so also as part of our sort of 20 great teen, quit fucking around, get back on track with the things we want to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long slogan, but that's what it is. That's what it is.
Yep. It fits on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Just real small.
Yeah.
We're also getting back to the concept of the B-Scotch newsletter, which mm-hmm. Sam talked about last episode a little bit.
So, and I got it all drafted this weekend. So I got to just kind of tune it up and get all the pictures and stuff put in it and get it technically ready to go. But this is something we should just love doing because it was essentially just our excuse to be crazy people.
And just sort of write goofy ass sort of love letters mm-hmm. to our fans.
And we've always gotten, I mean, most of the time when we send one out, like at least someone will take a screenshot of it and tweet it at us and be like, what is going on?
Are you guys okay over there?
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, they do communicate just a huge amount of information. And this next one, we decided we're
just pulling out all the stuff.
We're just going to go for it. And I think we don't know what's going to happen because our previous emails, we started going to the more traditional email marketing method of like, here's a tiny bit of text, here's a picture, here's a button for you to click on, mm-hmm. right? The thing is, who gives a crap? So instead, what we did with this one is actually basically styled it like a little mini magazine. And it has, I think it's like 7 pages. Like
it is long.
It is a big email.
Yep.
But all the stuff is fun and weird and cool. It's got some design sort of back end or behind the scenes work. It'll have a Crashlands comic in it, which you can just get.
Have we announced that yet?
No, it is.
Yeah, there is one.
So it'll be that, and that'll be debuting with the newsletter. So there's just like, it's just tons of stuff in there. And part of it was, again, taking the idea of saying, instead of saying, okay, what are we trying to get people to do? Which is essentially weirdly how we kind of shifted in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
To just saying, what do we actually just want to share with people?
And yeah. We're just
banging
wanna,
it out.
Well, what do we want to talk about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think the last couple of years, and as you would tell by, if you go back through our podcast history, right? Mm-hmm. The last couple of years were kind of all about us exploring what it meant to be a business.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And we were kind of modeling our behavior after what other people were doing. We were trying to understand what it would mean to hold on to the success, you know, the foothold that we'd finally gotten in the industry with the launch of Crashlands. Cause we were like, okay, how do we keep on doing this? How do we keep mm-hmm. this going for the next, you know, couple of decades?
Here's how we keep doing it: by changing everything.
Yeah, right.
And doing
which is what we did.
And doing nothing the same as yeah. how we got
and
here.
And mostly doing stuff that we didn't really like or want to do. It was just all stuff that we thought was important and that we had to do right. because that's what it meant to, you know, grow a business and move it into the future and so on. And our newsletter reflected that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Cause it was us trying to sell stuff.
You know? So we sent it very infrequently.
Yeah. And we were afraid to bother people.
And only if we felt like,
I mean, I was afraid to bother people constantly. Mm-hmm.
And only if we felt like there's action items in here.
Yeah.
There's stuff that people can do.
Yeah. And I was always worried, you know, I would always tell Sam, like, who am I supposed to be sending this to? Like, who's going to give a shit about?
And I'm like, just send it. Whatever you're saying, just
send it to everybody.
We gotta be very careful.
And I'm like, yeah, but we don't want to lose our subscribers, you know, whatever. But now we're just like, if we lose our subscribers, who gives a
that's
fuck?
Fine.
Because that means you don't care about what we're selling.
Because I wrote this hilarious 7-page thing, and you're either going to enjoy it or not,
yeah.
and that's fine.
Well, it reminds me of when we put up the Crashlands trailer.
Yep.
And we got like a 10% dislike,
mm-hmm. right? Some people really hate fun.
Some people hated it, and you know, 9 out of 10 people were like, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm on board with this, right? But every now and then you get somebody who was not only didn't like it, but who was mad about it, yeah. right? And our response to that was good.
Yeah.
Like, this is a filtering mechanism.
Go away.
Because
it was something I had to fight, though, because my initial response to that was, ooh, is there something we could do where we could
to get those people.
To also get those people, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of that part of that big lesson is that you can if you become, you know, more of a soulless, generic.
You become vanilla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just,
and then you don't offend anything.
Try to be as inoffensive and round off all the rough.
Yeah, and we mean inoffensive in the boring way. Like, we're not just saying don't say swear words. We're saying just don't do particular
don't
kinds
cause
of humor.
Any you know? Reaction. In
yeah,
anybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Be the tepid bathwater of the games industry.
yeah. And I think that's where. That's why I think we were falling into that and didn't realize we were doing it. And then we just kept on like going deeper and deeper for a couple of years. And now we're trying to climb back out of that and be people again, you know, and write newsletters as Sam is doing. He's writing it as himself, signing it as himself, right? Once this new blog system goes up so we can actually have a blog and write things, we'll be writing whatever the fuck we want without worrying about whether people care.
What the market impact is going to be. Because
who cares? Most people don't read it.
Most people, that's exactly it. Well, the same as a podcast, right? Like, the podcast isn't listened to by that many people.
Correct.
And we've had this question that we always come back to is then why do we do it? And it's because we want to. Because
it's fun.
Because it's fun to do. Other question, like, how do we should be doing all the things.
Yeah, how do we grow it? How do we brand it?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Recently, since we have it on YouTube with our, you know, cool little moving art, right? Mm-hmm. Then we've had a few comments recently where people are just like, oh, like, you guys, it's such a shame you guys have so few listeners. Maybe you should look into doing blah, blah, blah. And I'm looking at them like, I don't care. it just doesn't matter.
I think part of the misleading thing about it is because
this is for us, actually.
The videos are only going to have a couple hundred views ever because we have a very tiny YouTube channel.
Yeah, we have 6,000.
The podcast listenership is, for whatever reason, has been growing the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's because it's 2018 and we stopped fucking around, apparently.
So we're up to like 1,200-ish listens a week. Definitely over 1,000.
Per episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
To be clear, I love that people listen to it. And I do wish more people listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not why we're doing it. And just, you know.
Well, and it was, I think it was important for us to do back when we were getting 50 listens a week.
Yeah.
You know, because it's good for us to sit down and just sort of digest what's happening in the industry and kind of share our views and debate stuff. And for the, even if there was 8 people or 3 people listening to it, you know, we do get letters from people saying like, hey,
yeah,
this is important to me and I really appreciate it. Now it's probably at least, you know, a couple times a week we get emails from people thanking us for doing this and taking the time to put it on. Cause I think people know that we aren't advertising. We aren't like monetizing this podcast in any way. We're just, it's a sort of a service that we want to just do for people.
We have fun. We know some people appreciate it. And if you do want to say something, we haven't mentioned for a while, but we do have an email address you can send a note to.
That's true. podcast@bscotch.net.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So you can just shoot a little note. Tell us, don't send us anything mean because this is 2013.
It's not what we're doing.
We don't have time for that shit. But if you want to say something nice, we'd love to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you do send us something mean,
then maybe I'll send it back. Fuck you, buddy.
Well, fuck you.
That's also my favorite thing. One of my favorite things to do is because in YouTube comments, you know, people are typically mean.
I've just been deleting them anytime. If it's even borderline or mentions Crashlands, I just delete it.
Well, my favorite thing is just because you want to respond to positive comments sometimes.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes the negative comments are the only ones that actually get feedback.
Yep.
But my favorite thing still is actually when someone's just like complaining about something, is just to be like, no. And I think there's one of these that we did. I think it might have been on the Crashlands video. I can't remember exactly, but someone said something like a really long-winded, like, oh, you guys need to do blah, blah, blah. And then I think Seth's response was just, no. And it had like 100 likes on it. Everyone's like, this is hilarious.
I was doing that on Twitter the other day.
Yep.
I checked Twitter for the first time in a long time. And one of the first posts I saw was somebody demanding that we put multiplayer in Crashlands. I said, we're not going to do that. And then he said, why? I said, because it's hard and we're lazy. And then his response was, I'm so sorry for wasting your time. And I was like, it's fine, man. Don't worry about it.
Well, I think it's the whole thing. It's fun to be people. And yeah, we weren't being people for a while.
Yeah.
So who cares?
Well, yeah, especially a brand.
Yeah, it's been more fun to be in our Discord channel also. Yep. Just kind of like seeing what people are talking about and kind of trying to get back involved again. And I think a lot of it too is once we brought all these people on board too with the studio, we're kind of trying to diffuse the brand into the whole team. And we consciously tried to make it less about us and more about the team, which made us just step back from everything and kind of depersonalize everything. Right. We're just not doing any of that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's more fun. But yeah, if you want to talk in Discord, we're also there at discord.gg/bscotch.
That's right. And you can now integrate Spotify with the Discord,
which is pretty rad. I mean, we don't own Discord, but we like those devs over there. Mm-hmm. Cool. They're good people.
They're like our sister brothers.
They're like our sibling from another parent.
Sibling from another parent.
That's how the saying goes,
as
right?
As the rhyme goes. Yep. yeah, but it is pretty cool because now if you're in the... So we listen to Spotify basically all day.
I listen to Google Play Music.
Adam listens to Google Play Music.
I listen to one song on repeat on YouTube Music.
Yeah, all right, so I'm on... So I'm on Spotify all day, usually listening to one particular album or playlist on repeat.
So I listen to one song and then I occasionally just whistle three notes from it.
That's true. I hear it piercing through my headphones.
It's horrifying.
Because it can't be noise canceled because it's like a random noise. Yeah. So this is
actually this is something it's a tactic
about noise canceling headphones. Are like the one problem with these actually is it boils out all the white noise, but random noise
highlights something.
It actually makes you feel like they're more intense.
So it's because there's no white noise now,
right? Yeah. So if there's like a screaming baby on an airplane,
yeah,
it actually
all you can hear is the scream of a baby.
Yeah, you got to double down by wearing earplugs underneath your noise canceling headphones
and then earmuffs, fluffy muffs,
on top of that.
Yeah. That's my strategy is I just whistle randomly throughout the day to kind of just keep Adam and Seth and Sher on their toes. You know, I don't want you guys focusing too hard.
Yeah, I have to send Sam a note on Discord once in a while and be like, could you
shut the
fuck
up?
Can you not though?
Could you quit?
That was very nicely worded comment.
I'm still a good person somewhere. Mm-hmm, I appreciate this cold heart, you know.
There's a slightly tempered area.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's in the microwave. Right. It's like when you microwave a frozen thing and you get the warm
parts
spot.
Are hot,
yeah.
Some are cold.
Scalding hot. Right. Burrito middle.
But as a pro tip, if you're at a convention ever, especially if you're like showing a thing, you know, if you have noise canceling headphones, you can hear the things that are important better. And that cacophony of horribleness goes way, way, way down. So that has been pretty nice.
One of the things, when we went to PAX, we brought noise canceling headphones. Cause so we're all introverted in the sense that, you know, we can put on the show.
Oh yeah.
But the show puts on us.
It fucking wears us out, right? So if we go to the convention, you know, we're mingling with fans, we're talking to their devs and stuff. Then after about an hour, each of us is just like, I got to get the fuck out of here, right? But sometimes you can't. Mm-hmm. So you put on the noise canceling headphones, throw a tarp over yourself,
amazing.
You know, a blanket, it's some like, kind of a ghillie suit.
It's like a makeshift ghillie suit.
And you just...
Let's just stay hidden.
What would you put on it? What would it be covered with to blend
it
in.
It would be banners for other
banners
games.
For games. So you could just get in front of a banner and just...
You would deploy just it banner. Just like in the middle of a hallway or something. Uh-huh. And you'd just be inside of a sort of a pillar of banners.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, is it a ghillie suit or a ghillie suit?
Is this a GIF situation?
There must be a proper prince. It's probably someone's name.
Isn't GIF also somebody's name?
No.
I mean, probably though.
Probably.
It's unrelated to the
That's
like, GIF. Origin of...
Jeff. That's Jeff from New Zealand.
Yes, it's Jeff.
Oh man! All right. So
what are we talking about? I don't even know what's happening.
I don't know, but let's. So, a couple things from industry news that we can quickly touch on before questions.
Go.
One, blockchain watch. Blockchain. It's the hip new thing that teens are doing.
No one understands.
Nobody fucking understands it. And everybody, it's basically digital snake oil in the sense that it's useful, but nobody knows what it's for.
Yeah.
So you could probably use snake oil to start fires or something.
Actually, right? Maybe you could cook.
Maybe you could cook with it.
Probably.
It's not going to cure anything.
Probably.
And you're just going to slip in it and break your neck probably. Mm-hmm. So...
It's
slippery.
Yeah,
right?
It's very slippery.
Uh-huh. So there's this article in gamesindustry.biz about this company called, hold on, it's called Ever Dream Soft.
Okay, can we talk about this? Just quit putting soft.
Soft.
Quit. This is not the 90s. Quit it.
Although the company may have been around since the 90s.
So listen, Ever Dream Soft has this,
blockchain.
Ever Dream Soft has this e-game. It's an electronic game.
Wait, does it actually say e-game?
No. It's a collectible card game called Spells of Genesis. And they're basically, their big thing that they're trying to do is you collect cards in this game just like you would in Hearthstone or, you know, whatever the hell. And at some point, you can take your card and you can blockchainize it, which somehow turns this card into something that...
It puts it on the blockchain. So now it's a scarce good, right?
Now it's guaranteed to be unique.
Which is hilarious because we already had this technology. It's called just using a computer with the internet.
Yeah.
And Blizzard's been doing it.
Everybody's been doing it. Blockchain does not change this. But the
it does not.
The huckster spin that gets put on this is that now, so previously, if you owned a card in a video game, you just owned a license.
Mm-hmm. You didn't actually own anything.
Right. You're just paying for a license to access that card. You don't own it. And they're saying now with blockchain, you can own the card
Uh-huh.
Except this is absolute bullshit because the card is something that only exists on the servers of the company, right?
Yep.
So you, what? Like,
well, so now you can theoretically, you can go sell it.
You can sell it,
but you already could have theoretically done that.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing. The best part is the reason that they're doing this is because players were selling their cards. Right.
Okay.
So they said in their original version of the game, players were selling their cards and then they would report that their account got hacked and that their cards were missing to try to sell their cards and then get their cards recovered, right? Thereby creating duplicate cards, right?
Clever.
So with blockchain, they can actually track the unique identifier of a card.
How will that prevent somebody from claiming they got hacked, thus requiring the need to generate another duplicate card?
This does not solve any problems.
Okay, cool.
But, you know.
Sounds pretty neat.
But you gotta introduce some technical complications.
Well, yeah, this would be way harder to do most things.
The headline of it, I think, is just most indicative of where this blockchain stuff is.
The headline of the article is called, "It's hard to put in words how life-changing blockchain technology will be."
Yep.
So hard that one can do it.
So hard that nobody has succeeded at putting it into words.
Yeah, I was next.
So that's it. Also, Apple has announced that they're going to be opening a process to waive the developer fee for nonprofit organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something you have to apply for. It's only for certain conditions. Now, I read this morning and I just thought, this is weird.
Because the dev fee is $100.
It's $100
per year. Regardless of how many apps you have, it's just
right. So it's not that there's an organization that has to put out like 1,000 apps a year and so they're spending this fuck ton of money or something. And this isn't designed to help like struggling indie devs because there's a group of people who for whom $100 is actually a lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't for those people. This is for nonprofit organizations, educational institutions. And yeah, like that's not, $100 is not nothing, obviously, right? But these are institutions where
they have a lot of legal requirements.
There's a lot of stuff happening that means that they have to have enough money just to exist.
Right.
For those groups, $100 is not very much. And so I saw this morning.
Or rather, it's not crippling, right?
It's not crippling, yeah. It's not a significant barrier if it's really important to have an app in the app store for them. I just saw this and I was like, why? Why?
Because Adam
has a theory.
Intuition bells are going.
My suspicion and hope is that what the app store is going to do is up the fee, the developer fee, or do a per app fee, one or both of those. Because as we've talked about in the past, I think that that's a required mechanism just to make the content on their storefront better and make discoverability better. Because the main problem they have is just the amount of noise coming from just the huge influx of apps. And I'm not even talking about, because there are people who say that by having that barrier so low in terms of cost, anybody can just put their stuff on. And I think there might be some truth to that, but I think the bigger problem is the people who just dump 100 apps onto the store.
So if it was like $50 per app per year, if you got 100 apps on there, are you going to be dropping $5,000?
Right.
Or are you going to pull down the apps that are
right? Because these are actually, exactly, because these are the real problem in the app store is these people who basically just make shitty clones of a whole bunch of stuff, dump 100 of those onto the store, knowing that every additional one costs them nothing extra. And so they can just keep on rolling the dice to hope to get some money back. And typically that even if you're doing a shitty, shitty job of making terrible apps, if you're putting a couple hundred out a year, there's a pretty good chance you're going to make $100 back, right? You probably won't make much more than that, but you'll at least get to break even. And so I don't know what's going to happen, but I just thought it was such a weird move because it doesn't actually solve any problem. So what I'm wondering is, does it solve a problem they're about to introduce?
Well, let's keep an eye out.
Costs are going to somehow go up. So that's, I don't know.
That would allow them to lay a stronger claim to the idea of the store being a quality platform.
Yep.
Because this would actually be probably the biggest thing to purge really old, unsustainable apps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Because developers would just be like, nah, I'm not going to pay the fee to renew this thing.
Yeah. And actually, I honestly believe that that's more important than anything is the ability to let the store have a policy that sunsets unsuccessful apps. And I think it's true for Steam too. I think it's actually a problem that things can just go on there and stay forever because they become part of this infinitely growing noise. That clearly, there's like there aren't diamonds in there that just nobody has found yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there might be a handful, but realistically, there are zero statistically speaking. And so, it's only a net benefit to the platform and to future developers to have stuff that hasn't been successful just be removed over time.
Well, and the more the more you allow old stuff to accumulate, the more likely it is that there will be good stuff in there that people can't find.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You just can't find it anyway. So exactly.
So if you are a legit developer, you know, this doesn't, and as in you have a full-time dedicated team, you know, trying to put out quality content versus somebody who's just like, I'm going to clone something, bleh, and they just throw it out in a weekend.
And this is going to crush the dream that people have where they put an app out 5 years ago and they're just hoping that maybe someday it'll be successful. But that's the same dream as like buying a lottery ticket, mm-hmm. right? Like you're not going to win the lottery. You're just not. And if you've got a 5-year-old app or even a 1-year-old app, shit, if you have a 2-week-old app that hasn't seen any success yet, it's not going to be.
It's unlikely.
It's very unlikely. And so I think, who knows what they're going to do, but I do hope that this is, because I was actually thinking about this. This would solve so many problems if they would just let stuff fall off the stores.
Mm-hmm. People would just put it back on.
People put it back on, but if there's a cost associated with it, then because Steam has its per app cost, right?
But it's an upfront thing.
It's an upfront thing, but it is per app. So if your app falls off and you have to pay to put it back on, then, you know, that's just going to prevent people from doing it unless they just want it there.
Right.
Which then in that case, who gives a shit? It's fine. Right.
But if you have to drop $50 or $100 per year per game you've got, then
this is purely theoretical. We'll see if this actually happens or if it's literally just doing.
But you got to think too that there's only a couple platforms that could even do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because if you can't come into the market as a new platform and say, our thing is quality. And the reason we have quality is because you have to pay an annual fee, right?
Yeah.
You can't do this.
You have to be an established platform.
Yeah, you can't do this unless you already have clout. So,
so they're the ones who could sort of set that. But it's kind of an interesting, just general obsession that has been created on the internet where everything that goes on there is supposed to be permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just has this belief.
It's supposed to cost the developer nothing.
Right.
Because of reasons.
And it's also supposed to cost the player or the user nothing or next to nothing, right?
Information wants to be free.
Yeah, but there's this idea that like somehow it's everybody's responsibility just to store everything forever, somehow keep it safe while they do that, somehow pay for that while nobody else is paying them for that service. The whole thing is just wacky and makes no fucking sense. And I'm hoping that model of the internet, which, you know, I still want the model where things are freely available and so on, but that's about the internet. That's not about a particular website
this is a store.
Right? It's a store.
It's a shop, right?
So yeah.
You buy things through.
Right.
And it costs things. It costs money to get stuff onto there, and it costs money in bandwidth to get things off of there. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever. We'll see.
I don't know.
We'll have no idea.
The internet's wacky. Most of it doesn't make any sense and was founded on wacky principles. And mm-hmm. I hope that somebody who can do something does something. And, you know, who knows? Maybe Apple will do that.
Maybe.
We'll see.
All right. Next question. First question. Sorry. These questions come from podcast.bscotch.net. So if you'd like to get your question on to a future episode, get over there and ask him. All right. First question. My secret weapon asks, I feel like the current game I'm making may actually be commercially viable, but I'm terrified of a bad launch. What advice can you give someone to help them prepare for the launch of a game? I love you guys and everything you do. You're a huge inspiration to me. Please never stop being awesome.
Thanks a lot.
That's very nice.
All right. How to not have a bad launch? Is that essentially
what we should first say that a bad launch is no worse than no launch.
Correct.
So at least launch it. At least launch
it. At least try super hard.
Yeah. And I think we could dive deep into the specifics of marketing and all that stuff, but there's infinite stuff out there to look up.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need to hit that. I think what we should talk about is things that people tend to not talk about launching your game.
Mm.
Right?
Like what?
Well, for starters, there is no such thing as a good launch.
Correct. Things will go wrong. So just be okay with that because it's literally what's going to happen.
So lay down some contingency plans mm-hmm. and say, if this happens, and bear in mind that in a weird way, things going really well is also a bad scenario mm-hmm. from the right angle. Because if you get 200,000 players, hypothetically, mm-hmm. on day one, what's your plan for actually delivering customer support to these people?
Right. You just have a different set of problems.
You got a different, right.
It's like you
got money now and lots of problems.
Yeah.
And the money actually won't come until a month and a half from launch. So.
There's a lot of that stuff. But yeah, it's like that one of those self-help books that uses fuck in the title. Can't remember which one it is.
The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
I think that one. That's a good one.
He has some comment in there about this exact idea, which is even Bill Gates or Warren Buffett have money problems. They're very different than the money problems you have, right?
But they are problems.
It's like, who do I donate $10 million to, right? But they're constantly thinking about money also. It's mm-hmm. just with a different lens and a different reason, a different set of problems, right? And this is true for a game launch as well. No matter what the outcome is, you just have a new set of problems you have to deal with.
So the way people often talk about launching games, and this is true when you go to GDC talks and whatever, is the launch is often talked about as the end point of your development, where like it goes well and now everything's great.
Or it goes poorly and now you give up.
So if it goes poorly, everything stays the same, which is fine.
Right.
Because you know how to operate.
Because if you didn't have a successful game before, then you still don't. And your life remains predictable and you're still in control.
So if it goes really well, though, you have a huge amount of change chaos to deal with at that point. So just keep that in mind if that happens. I'd say the other thing to keep in mind is timelines, which I think was something that we did very poorly when we were launching games at first. And also that a lot of people just do poorly, which is, I think it's, again, conflating or just thinking that other people will care. So, and I think that they're all kind of bound together. So just keep in mind that no one knows about your game and no one cares about it. And they only will.
Which isn't an attack on you.
No, absolutely.
That's true of all of us.
It's the same fact for our games too. So it's only going to not be that case to the extent to which that you communicate to people in a timely and effective manner how they should and how they can care about the game.
Yeah, everybody needs a heads up.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to targeting, say, YouTubers, if this is your first game, or even press, if this is your first game and you want someone to actually write an article or maybe a preview about it, do not send them a note like the day of launch and say, hey, my game's coming out, blah. You're not big enough. You're not Beyonce dropping a new album with no marketing, right? It's not
You're not
happen.
Fallout Shelter.
Yeah, that's true.
Or Fallout Boy, for that matter.
So what you need to do is actually give people plenty give them ample time. And also start with the lower level publications. So don't go to like IGN and Kotaku first. Go, you know, find a few different blogs or something like that that cover games that are similar to yours. Things like RPG Codex, a couple of these other more niche sites. And get articles on there first.
Drum up a ruckus.
Drum up a little ruckus on the smaller sites. And then take that ruckus and use it to drum up
roll success.
A hootenanny over on the larger sites.
What comes after a hootenanny though?
Oh, I don't even know.
I think just a
cacophony.
Just a straight riot, probably.
Yeah, actually.
But yeah, so there's a whole process to it where it's not just like a one and done thing, actually, similar to the launch. It's like the way you should be viewing it is a transition from sort of no one knowing about your game to some people knowing about your game. And then as you sort of go along that spectrum, you always try to roll that social proof forward from smaller publications to bigger. And then the biggest key is to let the platforms know whatever social proof you got, tell someone at whatever platforms you're launching on, even if they don't respond to you, just tell them, pitch the game and show them the social proof you got. Because a lot of people don't realize that you absolutely should be letting the platforms know that your game's coming out.
And yes.
Because they do not know.
They all have mechanisms for this, right? Actually, I don't know about Steam. Steam might not.
Steam, you can usually, like, there's people in the forums and
actually
stuff.
Actually got you forums, can, yeah. Right. Yep.
Another thing that you may not know.
Developer forums.
Yes.
Is your website matters.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
In the sense that it doesn't really matter what's on it necessarily. It just needs to look professional.
Just take like an hour. Get Squarespace. Just put like. Yeah. Just make it look nice.
Get a good looking website. That
one pager.
That if somebody searches for your. And do it now. Mm-hmm. If somebody searches for your studio, they should find your website, right? And don't, the other thing is don't send people feedback requests the day before launch. Because this actually happens to us a lot where people we know will send us a link to their game and they'll say, hey, we're launching tomorrow. Do you guys have any final pointers? And they'll send us a game and we're like, yeah, we do. But you can't possibly fix any of these things. So, you know, if there's people who you need to rope in for testing or you want to talk to for feedback or whatever, do it well before launch, even before beta, ideally, because, you know, you don't want to put people into that position of having to decide whether to tell you things are wrong with your game because you can't even fix them or what. So, and the reason for the website is just that if you're talking to platforms, they're going to go looking for your studio and they want to know that you're a professional. Right. Because they want to sort of back the right horse. And if for example, they discover, hey, this person actually just has a bunch of clones and nonsense flooding our store. That actually doesn't look too good. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
So you want to make sure that you put on a professional air. It's kind of like it's the internet equivalent of wearing a suit to an interview.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
like you put on your good pants.
Mm-hmm. Even if on the inside, you got like a dirty ass t-shirt. You got to put a nice suit over it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are some launch tips.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Next question comes from Medusa May. What's your least favorite thing about your favorite game?
And your favorite thing about your least favorite game.
Whoa. Okay. I'll say my favorite thing about my least favorite game is how forgettable it is. Because I don't know.
I
mean, that's the thing about being the least favorite is it's the worst, right?
Which means you'd have to like have paid enough attention while playing it to both hate it and identify something you liked about it.
Is there any game you played recently that you did not like?
I actually, for the first time, I refunded a game on Steam.
Whoa. What was it?
But not because of the game.
Do we want to put it on blast? I don't know.
Yeah, it's not putting it on blast. Okay. It's just an interesting problem, which is it's the game called Midair, which is a studio is trying to sort of resurrect the gameplay of Tribes. Because Tribes Ascend died, right? So this game called Midair, and it's very similar to, I think, Tribes or Tribes 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's an online-only game, and it's an early access. Mm-hmm. So I bought it. I was like, fuck yeah, Tribes. And I go in there, and they have the server list, and there's two people. Two out of all of the servers, of which there were not many, only one server had two people in it, and there were no other people playing.
Yep.
And so I was like, I had to refund it because I can't play it actually, right? And so this is an interesting problem.
It's
a network effect.
Yeah. Online-only games, especially coming in as an indie, is very dangerous.
Well, and launching it into early access is also, dangerous. Of course, like, you know, people point to things like PUBG, and they're like, it worked for that, right? You know, but...
Yeah, but yeah, don't point to anomalies as examples.
Don't base your business model on a statistical anomaly.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, and I wouldn't say it was my least favorite game. It seemed to play well, you know, seemed good, but I just couldn't play it, so.
Yeah, I think talking about one of my favorite games, which is Binding of Isaac. I'm back there. I think... One of my least favorite things about the whole shindig, though I enjoy it immensely, is actually just that you can pick up so many things that actually end up sort of like crippling you in a really intense way for the rest of your run. But you know, some people find enjoyable, but I'm like,
but why though?
But now that for example, like if you're shooting out projectiles out of your face and they're just going like bullets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe one of them changes it, so now you're like launching mortars. If that's not a style of gameplay you've played with, like every time that happened to me for the first while that I did it, it would just make me die, right?
Right, because you don't know how to.
Because I don't know how to handle this new power that I have, and it's not just a straight upgrade, it's a side grade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's other games I play that do a similar thing where they'll sort of side grade you, but in a way that requires you to have a different skill.
You got to learn a whole new.
But you can't undo it, and then to learn it requires that you die because of how games work. So. That particular design thing has always kind of bugged me, but it's also, I mean, I love the game, so who cares?
So, all right. Yeah. So this makes me now think of, a few of us in the studio started up Goblins in World of Warcraft.
My God.
You mean right. Everybody except for me.
That's why I said a few of us. 3 out of 4. So World of Warcraft is one of my top games, just in terms of playtime and everything else. And in the game, you can choose what kind of a character you're going to be. You want to be an elf or a goblin or a human or a dwarf or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we started up goblin characters. And depending on what kind of a character you choose, you start in a different location in the world. This is referred to as your starting zone. And normally, the starting zones are meant to teach you the game. So if you start as an orc, you're kind of starting this desert and they're like, there's a bunch of boars. Go
kill some boars.
Use your one, you know, lightning attack that you have to kill some boars because you can summon lightning from your fingertips. So naturally the first thing you're going to have to go do is just kill a pig.
Fry him up.
Yeah, eat some bacon. So that makes sense.
And so the idea is, you know, they give you a series of pretty simple tasks that you can do to learn your abilities, learn how to navigate the world. The goblin starting zone was added much later in the game's life cycle. I think about 2009 or something like that. And the game was out for about 5 years. And so you could tell that they kind of designed this area for players who were much more familiar with the game's mechanics and maybe were kind of tired of doing the same old
starting zones.
Mm-hmm. And so the Goblin starting zone, all right, I'm just going to quickly hit a list of some of the things that happen in this. You are part of a mob. Mm-hmm. You have to go around driving a car and escort people around. You have to hand out goodies to people at a party. You have to pull off a heist.
Hmm?
You have to free a bunch of, or you have to attack a bunch of cave trolls who are enslaved in some mines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You need to pilot an airplane and have a dogfight. You enter a volcano and kill a giant turtle. You have to incinerate zombies with rocket flamethrower boots.
You got to cut down a bunch of mutant plants.
You got to turn yourself into a weed whacker and cut down a field of plants.
Now, the problem with all these things is just the fact that they're not in any way related to...
None of these are like the game.
How you actually play the game. None of these are... Like, that's not your skill. None of those are your skill. And so what ends up happening... Like, after the end of the hour, it took an hour to get out of that fucking starting zone.
Except here's the thing. We're not even through it yet.
Oh, God.
Because this zone lasts through level 15, and we ended at level 7.
Okay. So there's a lot more left, apparently.
There's a lot more left.
And all I want to do is just hit, like, 3 buttons and kill stuff. And
you want to play your character.
I'm just, yeah.
You want to use your ability.
Constantly throwing into the stuff. Yeah, so I think they overshot it.
Yeah. So I would say, yeah, I would have to say that's probably my least favorite part of my favorite game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think I don't have anything particular, but the thing that comes to mind is because the Fallout series, the first person shooter versions of those is my favorite series. But what they did in Fallout 4, the newest one, where they tried to make it a game that you play for the rest of your life.
Right.
I hate everything about that. Just all of it. Because it used to be the other Fallout games. You find a cool area. You're like, oh, what is this? They have like, they kind of tell you a story by the things that are there and the creatures that are inhabiting the space. And then you have to clear it in some fashion, usually, of course, by killing everything. But you clear it in some fashion. You kind of feel like you've explored a place.
And the story
and
is.
And then you leave.
The story is done.
Yeah, that part of the story is done, right? And then you leave. Okay. So now in Fallout 4, you find a place. It's kind of interesting too, right? So that's cool. You now explore it, you kill everything, and then you leave. And then you look back like the next day and it says, it's no longer cleared, right? Now you can go back and kill everything again for some reason. So now everything can be
so
cleared.
So you're sort of what's the mythological guy who has to push a boulder up a hill? It's a Sisyphus game.
Yeah, so now nothing is complete anymore. And actually there are quest givers who all they do is keep sending you to places that you've already been to go like retrieve fucking documents or something stupid. So you'd go and you'd have to kill everything again.
Oh, but they're arbitrary.
So they've made kind of a generic questing system.
There's a generic questing system. So there's like one of your main quests is basically just to be like, bring back documents when you find them, right? And so you just can always find them. And so they did that. They did that and then they added this whole settlement management part of the game, right? Where you can take certain places that you take and that you clear now are settlements that people can move into. You can give them jobs. You can like build stuff for them. So you can build like a little thing that they can now sell you weapons and whatever. And it's sort of like in Spore from back in the day when you go into galaxy mode and you set up all these planets and none of them can defend themselves. And so now you have like a galaxy-wide civilization that you're the sole defender of.
Right.
And so something is an emergency. You're like, oh, fuck, and I have to fly across the fucking galaxy to go take care of this planet. And this is the same. Like if one of your settlements now is in trouble, like you can set up turrets and do other stuff, but you still have to go there and do things. And so,
somehow nobody there can handle it.
Yeah. And so now all of a sudden, like they just added this shitty metagame where you're doing the city management.
Well, what they did is they added all these modern game design fundamentals.
Which is good. Like the whole goal is clearly, it's just so clearly to make me play the game forever. Yeah. And I hate that. I want games that I can actually
be done with,
you know, that I can finish
the game you should play is The Witcher 3 then.
Because you need to play that
the storytelling in there, this is in Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, but they had a bunch of quests and then they came back and they were like, these are mainly garbage because they're all this like, go collect 10 boars, you know, whatever the fuck. And all the quests are completely insane. Like they're really intense stories and people are getting just all sorts of weird shits happening. And all of it feels extremely pointed.
Also, the other thing about The Witcher is it has butts.
It does have many butts.
I started playing it. Like one of the first things is just
like, you're putting on clothes, aren't you? You're
putting on clothes.
Get out of a hot tub or something.
Yeah. Like your character just walks in front of the camera, just butt, like butt right there. Butt.
So it's like Game of Thrones.
And then it pans over and there's a woman over there. Her butt's there. Your butt's there. Everybody's butt.
Yeah, so it's just straight up Game of Thrones.
It's just butts.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I like it.
The game of butts.
But yeah, I was
the game of butts.
If you're looking for that actual story driven content that ends, that was the one for me that did it.
Okay.
So I played for like 7 hours.
Or just if you want butts.
Yeah, or if you just want butts. I saw quite a few butts in my game. And at some point I was just like, okay, you know, actually the thing that bothered me in that game was that it's actually hard. Like it's really hard. And I
was bothered
like,
you?
Yeah, because I got so into the stories that I just wanted,
yeah, wanted to have more.
I just wanted to finish the stories that I was on, but I kept getting murdered by this fucking like crazy Griffin Basilisk thing or something. And I was like, I'm just going to turn the difficulty down and enjoy myself.
So yeah, that's what I typically do.
That happened to me in, I played Divinity 2. Mm-hmm. And normally when I play games, I turn the difficulty up.
I don't, so Kyle, I have a bone to pick with you because I don't get people who play a game who turn the difficulty up before playing the game.
Well,
as if you know.
No, you're so good. No. Here's the thing.
Because we get this with Crashland sometimes.
Here's the thing. I've played some games in my day.
You have.
I've played a couple of games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredibly rare that I play a game and am confused about how it works or that I can't very quickly figure out the sort of optimal strategy that is intended, right? And Divinity is pretty much the same way. It's complex, but it's a turn-based RPG with a squad. And so I was like, I know this game. I know this type of game. And so I cranked the difficulty up by one level. There's like three levels above that or whatever. So I cranked it up above normal difficulty and just to the harder one. And I just got absolutely annihilated. And I was like, I don't even understand what you could do at the higher difficulty levels. Cause
could you make it harder? Basically?
Yeah. I couldn't win like 3v1 fights against regular NPCs, my level, you know? So anyway, that is not the greatest.
Yeah.
That sort of difficulty spike.
I do think it's nice.
Although was it fun on normal mode?
It was
feel appropriate. You're balanced.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very slow game, like real slow.
Sounds like easy mode.
It takes forever to like one single battle with a character or with a group of characters may take like 10 minutes, you know.
Put on easy mode, mow them down.
Yep. Well, that's the thing. So I played with Sampy and we did a co-op thing, my wife, and we put it on. I was like, we'll put it on easy mode because she doesn't play a lot of games. And it was trivially easy. Like I was like, we could actually, cause one of the big things in the game is you can do anything, right? So you can actually fight any character you want to.
Yeah.
Even if they're an important quest character, you could just be like, no, I just fight them and take whatever, or, you know, you can steal things all the time. Mm-hmm. Like you see a chest you can't open and you're like, no problem. And you just steal the chest, right? Like I'll open this later. So it's a very open-ended game, but the easy mode was so easy that we didn't have to do any of the story elements that would normally be a challenge. Cause you go into some encampment.
Did you just like fight the whole town?
Yeah. you go to this encampment and there's this guy who's basically like a mob boss and he runs the town and he's got these goons everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he holds a really important quest item for you to get out of this sort of like prison camp. And normally you have to go through this elaborate series of story events to like get onto his good side and do all these things. And if you engage him in combat, then all of his goons come in and start beating the shit out of you. There's tons of them, right? And it's a huge battle. So we did it on easy mode and we just walked in there and just punched him and he just like died immediately. And then his goons came in and we just kind of like boom, 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 just kind of lined him up and knocked him down, you know?
So they just have a really... Really,
yeah. So on normal mode, it's hard. On easy mode, it's trivial. And on slightly above normal mode, it's literally impossible. Mm. So
I don't know.
It's not a good difficulty curve.
I do really like when games actually allow you to change the difficulty on the fly.
Yeah.
It's very handy for exactly those situations where you're like, I thought I was much more badass than I am.
Turns out I wasn't.
Quietly turn this down.
Yep. So I don't know. I mean, we did do that in Crashlands. We didn't allow people to turn the difficulty down.
Yeah,
I still stand behind it.
We still get a bunch of, I mean, that's like one of our support requests frequently. Someone's like, I started the game on insane mode and it's so hard. And we're like, yes.
Yeah.
It is called insane mode, but apparently this is one of your people, Seth. So I don't know.
No, I never play games on the hardest mode because I always assume that it's rigged. Because it usually is, right? I mean, it's like, it's supposed to be meant for those people who... I don't know who this is.
It's the getting over.
But we also do get support requests basically daily for people wanting multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing that. So,
that's true.
It's not a good argument in favor of letting people
change. 20 Great Team will do whatever they want.
And just because people want a thing doesn't mean they should have it.
That's true.
Because often it's worse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
So on that note, that's all the time we have for this week, everybody. So thank you all for listening. We'd like to thank our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. If you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, you can head over to our Discord server at discord.gg/bscotch. Come say hey. We'll be lurking in there with about 240 other people. Also, if you'd like to adorn your body with Butterscotch merch, you can check out our shop at shop.bscotch.net. We currently only ship to the continental or the contiguous United States. Mm-hmm. Working on it. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Also, if you'd like to send us something, we have a mailbox. You can send us, I don't know. We've gotten a lot of M&Ms.
We have gotten a lot of M&Ms.
Specifically from a particular individual. Mm-hmm. So if that individual wants to send us more M&Ms or somebody else wants to send us M&Ms, you can do that. Our mailbox can be found at mailbox.bscotch.net. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.